Hello all, welcome to the October 4th City of Morro Bay Water Reclamation Facility Citizens Advisory Committee. On a remote phone in San Diego is our esteemed chair, Mr. John Diodati. John, are you there?
Yes, Bill, thank you for that introduction. I'm here.
All right. So we consider him part of our quorum, and we will be interfacing with him regularly during this broadcast. And obviously, we have a quorum here, so we can call this meeting to order. So first, let's take a moment of silence. And now let's stand for the Pledge of Allegiance.
Ready, begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay. First of all, we are going to go up here to this esteemed group and ask for announcements or presentations. Dale. Val. Over here. How about you, Richard? Okay, that takes care of that. Now we get to public comment period. And you may be aware of the agenda and its reports of business items concerning the Work Act. But this is where you can come up to the podium, identify yourself, and talk about anything you want to talk about other than the agenda. You're welcome to it.
Steggy, Morro Bay. I've learned something very disturbing about the WRF project. That is, that the current design doesn't address Coastal Commission concerns that caused Morro Bay to start a project to move the plant inland in the first place. If the current design goes forward, our new wastewater treatment infrastructure will be just as vulnerable to flooding and sea level rise as it is now. It took me a while to understand this because I'm not an expert in these things. So after I was told about this problem, I decided to run it by an acquaintance that I met in my activist work. He's a wastewater treatment plant expert who's been building plants for more than 10 years, and that makes him not only way more knowledgeable than me, but I think, I think maybe more of an expert than the people on the project team. The wastewater treatment plant expert told me the same thing I'd already been told. Keeping the design the way it is now would be almost like not moving the plant at all. So we would waste tens of millions on top of the $2 million plus already wasted and be no better off. In fact, we could be worse off. Here's the problem that was explained to me by the wastewater treatment plant expert. The plant is only one component of a system for collecting and treating sewage and producing reclaimed water. In the current WRF design, the successful operation of the plant is dependent on a giant lift station to be placed on the property where the current wastewater treatment plant is, and dependent on a long line that will convey the sewage from the lift station to the new inlet plant. The plant, the station, and the line comprise a system. If any component fails, then the system fails. The city's 2008 flood hazard study says the current wastewater treatment plant is in a topographic depression, situated between higher ground to the east and a narrow swath of sand dunes to the west. Putting the lift station in the same topographic depression means it will be vulnerable to exactly the same natural hazards as the existing plant. With this key component of the system at risk, it's almost like not moving the plant at all. Yes, there are ways to address natural hazards, but similar risk mitigation could be used on a plant. You may recall that I said we might be even worse off. That's because the very long line that would carry all the town's sewage to the plant would be at risk of catastrophic earthquake damage at one or more points. And the longer the line, the greater the risk. Personally, I like Mr. Sadowski's idea that he mentioned at the forum last night of putting the new plant on the old Hansen site. might not be perfect, but it would actually be safer than the current design, and it would cost tens of millions of dollars less. It seems to me that if we move our plant inland using the current design, the only ones who'd benefit, and at our expense, are the consultants and the engineering companies. And by the way, the person who told me about this was Mr. Sadowski. It seems like he might be the only one associated with the project who recognized the situation here and the significance of it. Thank you.
Thank you. Do you have any comments, staff, on that at all?
One of the items that that is being addressed in the facility master plan is you know the presence of the lift station in the floodplain is something that is you know it is a it is something that the design team recognizes. One of the challenges is that's where all the collection system in town comes to, and so you know unless you're looking at possibly realigning all those collection system lines that come into that one center of town, which becomes way outside the purview of the water reclamation facility project, then you have to find a cost-effective location that's near where those pipes come together. Now, with the modern lift station technologies and the types of lift stations we're looking at, they're often designed for these types of conditions. Many lift stations are designed to convey both stormwater and wastewater in communities all over the country and all over the world. But it is true that it would be located in an area that is within floodplain. But you know that's part of the facility master plans. You know it's part of what they know going into this.
And that can be designed to consider those parameters and those contingencies. And there's well proven technology to take care of that.
That's correct.
Yeah. Anybody else out there?
How much would something like that cost? More or less.
How much would something like
what you're describing, a lift station that's armored up for the floods?
You'll see that with the facility master plan. That's part of what they're addressing.
But, I mean, just to give me a figure, how much?
I wouldn't want to shoot a figure out when I'm just a few weeks away from having a facility master plan with a real number.
And Mike, this is John. Can you guys hear me?
Yeah.
Thanks, Bill. Mike, to you, these lift stations typically are underground and designed for having water in them anyway. And often and most likely in this case, there'd be some sort of backup generator offsite out of the floodplain to provide that redundancy for power versus the actual wastewater treatment plant. Those are above ground facilities. Waste is stored above ground. That's what we're moving out of the flood zone, tsunami zone area that poses a greater risk. We're having one slider piece of the facility below ground isn't as consequential in a storm when you're removing the majority of the facilities. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Yeah, I agree. My background's electrical utilities, and we put vaults in floodplains all the time and weren't concerned about it. But there are design parameters that you have to adhere to, of course. Anyone else out there? Come on up.
Bart Beckman, Morro Bay. I may repeat some. Relative to the electrical part, I work for Southern California Edison. This is not why I'm here, but underground vaults are a big problem. We found at Edison, this is off my subject, but since it was brought up, we found that it was thought that underground it would be a lot less expensive than overheads because of the wind and all the issues. It was found that it's really because of all the issues of undergrounding and explosions. It's not like it's a clean issue, but beyond
no, it's that, not clean.
It's not my expertise. What I'm here for, two things. One, facilities master plan and the schedule, primarily the schedule.
Yeah.
The facilities master plan and the schedule, on the schedule, it says there's a facilities master plan. It implies it should be done by the MOU and to resolve the MOU. So you're dealing with the owner of South Bay Boulevard. So you've got to have what's there. I guess that's a negotiation that you can't tell anybody about, but I've been told it should be concluded within a week or two. And getting to my real point, a key issue last time was the MOU. It's not even on your schedule. Getting the MOU in place is not on the schedule that you have. Not there. And it's not there. Unless there's a new schedule that came out last week.
Well, there is one with this agenda.
Okay, so you're talking about something, a major issue for 4 months, you went without that being scheduled. So, so there is one, I didn't look, it just got there. Relative to the overall schedule, it needs to be incentive to get the water in place as soon as possible. I don't see the incentive by the current process to do that. It's take, run the clock out, get the sewer plant in place, then start the water, get the water in place. There needs to be incentive, some creative ideas that came up at the forum last night. By the way, the forum was very good by everybody. Richard, y'all six did a great job. But there was a lot of interest there. I've seen no interest by this panel, much less the council to any large extent, on the schedule. Cost and schedule go together. Costs, time is money, and I really encourage you to look at the schedule, look at opportunities. You have brought up looking at Cayucas, which tends to seem like they're going ahead. Other facilities seems like they've gone fast. Finding incentive, not only to bring the sewer treatment plant in sooner, but more importantly, the water to bring in, that will start offsetting the costs of all this. So I encourage you to look at the schedule. I apologize, I didn't look at the latest schedule, that the MOU was belatedly added, and I will say substantially belatedly added when that was a key issue last night. Thank you.
Thank you. Any comments from staff on that one? Might as well take them as we go.
We'll be updating the committee on that as one of the agenda items.
Anyone else? Public comments, still going. Going, gone. Okay, this gets us to the first agenda item, which is our consent calendar. And the only thing on it is the approval of the minutes from the previous meeting of August the 2nd. And the staff recommends we approve those minutes. Any comments or concerns or corrections? Oh, Jenny, you're late. You didn't have a chance to make your comments. Did you want to make any comments before we get into the agenda? I'm sorry. You usually do. No? Yes?
A comment on what?
Anything.
Announcements.
Announcements. I can make it later. Okay. Okay, good. Okay, we're back to the minutes. Minutes, okay. In minutes, yes.
There was a motion by Steve Shively to approve A1, and it says Paul Donnelly and Paul Guerrero abstaining. Paul Donnelly and Dale Guerrero abstaining, but weren't you absent that day?
No, we weren't in attendance at that particular meeting, so we couldn't approve it. We weren't there.
Yeah, well, I guess what...
That's what I'm going to do on this one.
On the thing is up above where it says who was absent, it doesn't have you. It doesn't have you as absent. Oh, you were here.
Oh, for this particular one.
Yeah.
This one's speaking to the prior meeting.
Okay, this was August.
This is August 2nd. Yeah.
That was in reference to the meeting in July.
Oh, okay.
Okay, I need a motion and a. Oh, here we go, Jenny.
Sorry, I actually do have a comment, and this is on the meeting minutes. And I just wanted to remind everybody that Mike had noted that there's going to be a discussion about the Santa Paula trip on the October agenda, and that there was consensus by all of us to add it to the agenda, and it's not on the agenda. I'd like to hear about that trip.
Sure, I'd be glad to jump on. I did send emails out to four of the committee members who attended the Santa Paula and Fillmore trip, because what we discussed was one of the members could present. Mm-hmm. And at the time, nobody was really ready to do that, but I'd be glad to put that back on the agenda when somebody is.
And you wanted someone that attended, like Richard or I or you or whatever, to make that a report?
Yeah, anybody that was there, just to give a quick
summary. It's a little late, but okay. You're going to put it back on the agenda for the next meeting?
I'd be glad to, and what, you know, and you all can.
Because there's, there.
Somebody would like to take, I mean, it wouldn't be.
I wouldn't mind doing it, but okay. I need to know whether I'm going to do it or not, because I need to go get all the stuff.
Sure. Now, one thing to think about is the next meeting we have is the December meeting. And that's going to be a very full meeting with Facility Master Plan, but we could go ahead and agendize that.
I thought I thought we were going to have a meeting in November.
No, we wouldn't be planning for a meeting in November because we have the Facility Master Plan coming out the week after and a community meeting sometime the week of the 14th.
Oh, okay.
So we had looked at doing a December meeting just because we won't have a lot to report to you in first week of November.
Well, does anyone else want to do it? I can do it. I can do it under 3 minutes.
And we can agendize it, though. We'll go ahead and add it to the agenda.
I would vote to just discuss it 3 minutes right now while it's reasonably fresh rather than waiting 2 months.
Sure, yeah.
Under miscellaneous items, that's.
Yeah, and I'd be glad to, you know, for you all to kind of, if you all want to discuss it. Okay.
Good. That would be wonderful. Is everyone in an agreement here?
Yeah.
I'll leave that to the committee.
Well, we haven't gone to the approval of the minutes yet. All I need is a motion and a second, and then with discussion.
I'll make a motion as long as we follow the minutes and we add it to the agenda.
Okay, we need a second.
I'll second.
Okay, discussion. All in favor for approving the August 2nd minutes as stated, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Anyone opposed? Okay, so we will go ahead and we will talk a little bit about Santa Paula and Fillmore later, and then we'll get through the business items. B1, WRF CAC subcommittee updates and recommendations. So we have we have engineering. That's Steve, and he's on here. And we have environmental.
We have nothing.
And finance.
Okay, so I just have a few items. One, to give an update about the WIFIA program. I've mentioned that several times. It's basically it's a clearinghouse at EPA of grants and various funding mechanisms. And just wanted to let folks know that, and this is specifically, I guess, for Mike and anybody in the audience that's interested, there is going to be a meeting in San Francisco at the EPA Region 9 office on November 14th from 9 to 3:30. And they're also going to have a meeting in Los Angeles at the federal building on the next day, November 15th, from 9 to 3:30. And at those two meetings, they're basically going to tell you all about the WIFIA program and all the different forms of assistance for wastewater treatment plant development.
Could you repeat those again?
Yeah. It will be held November 14th in San Francisco at the EPA Region 9 office, and that's at 75 Hawthorne Street in San Francisco, and that's from 9 to 3:30. And then there's the next meeting is at in Los Angeles. It's going to be the same subject. It's at the Los Angeles Federal Building, room E, 300 North LA Street. And again, same time. So for people that don't want to get this information off the internet, they're going to be people. The nice thing is you can ask as many questions as you want. And you'll be able to talk with the folks from EPA, after the meeting. I also wanted to mention that I was pleased to see in a newly released intended use plan by the state of California. This is through the Clean Water State Revolving Fund folks. And this is in the plan itself. Morro Bay actually made it into the plan. And I think it was the $10 million that our consultant was able to get for us. So we're on our way. Do you want to talk about that a bit?
Yeah, that's the planning loan for the through the State Revolving Loan Fund. That's correct. And we'll have an update on that, too, in a minute.
Perfect. And I look forward in the future to see, you know, a whole lot more funding from Morro Bay.
We'll talk about that. Definitely.
Great. Great. Thank you.
Barbara, did you have any?
No, my comments will be.
How about you, Rich? Did you sound like you wanted to say something? No? You're good.
And Mr. Chair, this might be a good time, since we had a representative, I believe, or a representative of each of the subcommittees, this might be a good time to give the Fillmore Santa Paula overview,
okay,
if you'd like.
Val, you up to it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Before we get going, I have to go pick up my grandson. I got a call, so I'm going to have to excuse myself. Thank you.
I was going to depend upon you, Richard, for all the technical.
Sorry. We could maybe do it in comments later.
Take care. I hope everything's okay.
Yeah.
So we visited two communities. Fillmore was the first community that we visited. It is an agricultural-based town of about 15,000 people, and the old plant was built in 1955. And the city constructed the new wastewater treatment plant in response to requirements of the LA Regional Water Quality Control Board regarding discharge into the Santa Clara River. The city spent about $70 million on the water recycling project, including the wastewater treatment plant, which was $42.5 million for the plant. The city entered into a contract with American Water to design, build, and operate a zero discharge wastewater facility. The facility includes a highly advanced filtration system based on membrane bioreactor, or MBR, technology and ultraviolet disinfection system. The system yields clean water suitable for irrigation, and the city no longer discharges directly into the Santa Clara River. At full capacity, it's designed to treat 2.4 million gallons of water per day, and currently they treat 1.8 million gallons. The advanced filtration system allows for unrestricted use for irrigation purposes, including that for two schools, a park, and a green belt. They also discharge 800,000 gallons per day, which is released into an underground wastewater disposal system that provides groundwater recharge. The city owns the plant. It was constructed in 2007, and it was in operation by 2010. The treatment facility is largely above the ground, and most processing stations are enclosed, with the exception of the aeration basins. The plant includes office and maintenance building, a recycled water distribution system and pump station, areas for coarse screening, grit removal, fine screening, etc. They also have a recycled water storage tank that can hold 1 million gallons of water. They practice energy efficiency in the sense that the plant practices low flow during the day when costs for energy use are at the highest. Wastewater is treated during off-peak hours. The plant has a pumping capacity of over 4,000 gallons of effluent a minute. during the course of our visit, the door to the dewatering building, biosolids transport area, they produce Class B sewage sludge that is transported off-site, was left open for our access. And there were some comments in regards to the noise, but the door is usually shut while processing. Personally, when I was at Fillmore, I detected little or no odor and noise associated with the plant operation. The plant is located adjacent to agricultural fields and is some distance from residential or commercial receptors. They do hope to be able to expand their reclamation activities in the future, but that's basically what they're doing right now. And Santa Paula, on the other hand, is a is a larger community of about 29,000 people, and their plant was originally built in 1939, and they too were also subject to the same restrictions imposed upon them by the Water Board in regard to concerns over discharge into the Santa Clara River. In contrast, the city entered into a design, build, operate, and finance 30-year contract with Santa Paula Water, a limited liability corp, which is the joint venture formed by PERC Water and Alinda Capital Partners to build a facility that also utilizes MBR and UV disinfection system. It was constructed in 2008 and was in operation by 2010. The new plant cost $62 million. At the end of the 30-year contract, the city was to take over ownership of the facility. However, in April of 2015, the City Council approved a bond measure financing early purchase of the facility for $70.8 million. This move saved the residents a lot of money since the interest rate in the bond was much less than the 8.2% they would have paid Santa Paula Water. Apparently, this early buyback stems from 2013 litigation procedures associated with chloride cleanup at the plant. The city now owns the plant. The facility produces 3.4 million gallons a day with a capacity up to 4.2, and it has a footprint of 1.5 acres. The tank area is less than 3/4 acre. The PERC system utilizes underground tanks for most of their sewage processing, including a portion of its MBR. The processing tanks have common wall construction as well as less piping, et cetera, therefore decreasing the footprint of the plant. But various aspects are above the ground, including the headworks, the dewatering area where the sludge collection is, membrane separation tanks, and control buildings. A concrete slab lies on top of the tanks with the office and operations systems and lab on top. The underground tanks are designed to control odor and noise associated with plant operations. However, there is a significant amount of noise associated with the HVAC system or the turbine, the blower for aeration. I don't know if you remember that. And the headworks and noise associated with the headworks and dewatering area, which are above ground and only partially enclosed. The area in front of the office buildings has a large pond with a cascading waterfall that aids in stormwater containment. The highly filtered water that is pumped in, they produce a highly filtered water that's pumped into three large percolation ponds that's built on 13 acres located to the west of the main plant. The water is then allowed to seep into the ground and ultimately back into the Santa Clara River. The city of Santa Paula is working on other uses for the water. Again, this plant is bordered by open area, including agricultural fields, the Santa Clara River, as well as commercial and residential buildings ranging from a couple hundred feet to several hundred feet. One last note, the city of Santa Paula and I believe Fillmore have banned the use of water softeners due to the high costs associated with water treatment. And I guess the last statement would be is that the cities are very proud of their facilities, and rightly so. They both seem to work well. One of the things that I got out of this is that they're still working on the reclamation aspect of it terms of how the water, they know that there's other higher uses that potentially they can use the water for, and they're working towards that. So anyway, I do have a lot of photographs, but unfortunately I couldn't download them from my phone. I'm having problems with that. I need a technical person to help me. But anyway, that's it.
Thanks, Val. That was very, very, very well done. Dan, you look like you're nervous. Do you want to? I went also, I endorse everything that Val said. I think that Fillmore is essentially above grade. Santa Paula invested a lot in the superstructure and put a lot of their process underneath and underground. Neither of them produce potable water, but I would say that I was very pleased with their appearance and their status as far as being clean and well cared for. And they took their time with us. They let us ask any question that we wanted and invited us back if we wanted to come. And were very gracious and informative. And I was glad I went. And maybe we should go again. I don't know if there's enough interest, but that was very well done, Val. Thank you. Okay, that gets us to business items B1 and a B2, a program status report of staff.
Pulling up the PowerPoint. I have a PowerPoint that basically summarizes the staff report,
is
the status update. So, an overview of what I'll give a brief overview of the status report from the staff report. We'll talk a little bit about what's been accomplished since our last August meeting. We'll give an update on the property negotiation. We'll talk about, you know, briefly about the year-end summary for fiscal year 15-16 that we've included, and give you an update on project financing, and also give an update on environmental review and permitting. So since the August program update, we had the EIR scoping meeting on August 16th. It was very well attended. I'd say there were probably over 60 or 70 people in attendance. We did an evaluation of alternatives considering now that we're looking at South Bay Boulevard to look at possibly rerouting a couple of the city's lift stations, and to see if that would be cost effective. The conclusion was that the expense to reroute those lift stations didn't really warrant it, and the size of the amount of flow they send into the system wasn't that considerable. So we're back to the original plan of having the one new lift station down at the wastewater plant that'll convey all the flow up to South Bay Boulevard. We did investigate that to see if it would be cost-effective to modify the collection system. We developed some preliminary pipeline alignments, put some field notes together, and maps of the utility conflicts for the facility master plan team. There's a preliminary groundwater model of the Lower Moro Valley that's been prepared from a lot of the city water information, It really focused on the area downstream of the Narrows. We'll talk about that in future meetings. One of the schedule items I have is when you're going to see that at a future WRFCAC meeting. We did an initial assessment of water reclamation opportunities in Choro Valley. We'll also cover that in the future. It's not complete. Continued compiling water quality and flow data at the plant, and then we reviewed an internal admin draft of the facility master plan that the facility master plan team had put together. And this was just an internal draft for us to look at with them, and kind of compile all the work that had been done to date. So we internally reviewed also some draft site plans for the Phase 1 water reclamation facility, so Black & Veatch is moving on with that. We are negotiating a draft memo of understanding with the property owner at South Bay Boulevard. So they have a version they sent us. We sent some comments back to them, we'll talk a little bit about that in the schedule item, but the goal is to have that finalized this month. But the negotiation's going well, no surprises. Final salinity control plan, we have Larry Walker and Associates is working on developing a draft ordinance for controlling self-regenerating water softeners. You recall we talked about that earlier this year. No action's been taken, nothing's come to council or anything. We're just trying to put some materials together for future WRFCAC and council consideration. Just and what Valerie talked about a little while ago is a good segue to that. All these other agencies with reuse programs have seen considerable benefit to controlling self-regenerating water softeners. We have some initial draft architectural, we've seen initial draft architectural simulations of the South Bay Boulevard, so the facility master plan has some rough drafts of those. Again, these are internal for us to comment back and forth and work through some issues prior to releasing a draft master plan.
Excuse me, back to the ordinance. Mm-hmm. So are you actually taking a look also at Santa Paul and Fillmore's ordinances?
That's correct. In fact, Larry Walker helped Santa Paul develop theirs.
Oh, perfect.
So they have the background, they've got the budgets, and so, you know, they've done a lot of this. That's one of the reasons we brought them on board. They have a good track record with these programs. Regional Water Quality Control Board, we met with them to discuss the existing plant discharge and renewal of that permit, and then also the overall water reclamation facility program.
So when are they planning to issue the permit? I mean, doesn't the clock start ticking once the permit's issued, and
well,
then it's 5 years from that?
Our clock is already ticking. We assumed our go-ahead was June.
Oh, June.
So,
but they still haven't issued it.
But the, yeah.
The city manager started the clock ticking in June,
yeah.
for us. The regional board has not issued the draft permit. It's still being internally reviewed at their offices. They have it back from their consultant. We don't have a scheduled date for them to issue that permit yet. So they're working on it.
What's taking them so long?
It's their internal document. No real rush on, because once the clock starts ending, there's administrative penalties that could be issued. So this really gives us a little bit of breathing room towards the end of the project without issuance of that permit. So
I understand that. On the other hand, you know, it kind of keeps us on track too.
Well, the city manager is keeping us on track with our own internal schedule. So
starting June, okay.
Yeah, starting in June, clock is started and it's running right now.
Yeah, we're
But she's got a point. Until that permit is issued, that's when the clock starts on the 5 years. Is that correct?
Well, I don't know that there'd be anything in there to counter the letter that the executive director had sent us that said it'd be done by 2021.
It already exists. Yeah.
So I don't think we'll see anything in there that would counter that. But we don't know till we see the draft. The thing I'll say is working with other agencies that also have NPDES permits, that there several of them, you know, are you know, a little behind. So it's not just us. It has to do with how they develop the NPDES permits, and how they do the renewals.
Okay.
We also coordinated with the EIR consultant team on facility master plan progress and began sharing some information, or continued sharing information with them. So an update on property negotiation, and kind of give you a quick update. So we've centered it around having sufficient area for the phases of the water reclamation facility, including full water reuse, whatever systems we might need there, future solar generation too, and also a potential future corporation yard in terms of negotiation or discussion with the property owner. Not that any of that has to happen day one, but just for the negotiations and the discussions.
I thought that the property owner didn't want a corporation yard there.
That wasn't the property owner, that was the neighbor.
Oh, the neighbor, okay.
Yeah. It was the neighbor that leases the property. So the property owner's desire to minimize the unusable property has also been considered, and that affects where you kind of draw the property lines. And so we've been working on these draft site plans for the facility master plan to help inform the city's decision. So the MOU is going to be brought to council for review and approval. We expect the MOU will be finalized this month. And the city attorney advised not to purchase the property until the EIR is actually certified. And so that's in that timeline's in the MOU.
So does the city need to put down a deposit like we've done before?
I don't believe that this property owner has asked for any deposit.
This property is not on the market right now, so it's not the same as when we were looking at, you know, properties that were for sale.
Well, you state in your report that the city attorney has recommended or advised not to purchase the property until the final EIR has been certified. And it looks like it's November 2017. Well, that's 13 months away.
Well, the memo of understanding has that timeline in it.
So both sides of this negotiation are clear on this, and this is
correct.
Not an impediment for us to go forward on in EIRs or property evaluations or any other aspects of us getting on the property and proceeding.
And in this case,
we're only looking for like a public lot carved out of their larger parcel.
Correct. We're looking at about something less than about 30 acres, just because the property owner doesn't want a lollipop lot.
Right.
They want a corner of it carved off. About 30 acres of the corner, if you ran straight up South Bay and made kind of a rectangle there.
Now, being that would be carved out of that, be a public lot, so it isn't really a subdivision. Is it something that the city would have to annex, or does that really even matter here? And annexation?
Because
you obviously have facilities outside the city limit, water tanks and whatnot. Would
we're
this
still
be like that?
Pursuing the advantages and disadvantages of annexation through LAFCO. So if it's in our best interest to annex, we'll do that. If not, we won't.
Val.
Just to state the obvious, that you have sufficient information in regards to the facilities master plan to show the property owner the footprint, and because the timing, there are two different, you have two different timings, because the MOU is slated to be completed by first part of, or 17th of October, and the facilities master's plan is not going to be completed until 11/9, and that's the date that you set for the public meeting. So just stating the obvious, that they do have sufficient information to see what we've come up with so far in regards to the facilities master plan, generally what it's going to look like, and the footprint.
We've ensured it's consistent with the site plans we're developing in the master plan.
So excuse me. Just to be clear and state the obvious, the MOU is expected to be finalized in October. Regardless of whether or not there is earnest money included in those terms, the other terms will be sufficient so that we won't have 10 months later a backout like we did with the first site. Is that a correct assumption?
That is correct, and one of the provisions in the MOU is this is being acquired under threat of condemnation.
Okay. Thank you.
So we did want to provide an update, too, for the end of fiscal year 15-16 budget. I mentioned last time when we met in August that it takes a couple months for all the different consultant invoices and charges to come in for end of fiscal year. So we do have that updated here. You'll notice it winds up being about $200,000 higher than we were at last time. I'll talk about why that is. Still considerably below what the city's budget was for fiscal year. City's budget was around $2.6 million, came in about $1.6 million. All these are consultant contracts that really made the difference, and they're all contracts with defined scopes of work, defined deliverables. It had to do with when they billed the time and when they accrued it, not that they went out of budget or over budget or anything like that. Just the end of the fiscal year is not when most of these contracts particularly end. It's kind of becomes, for consultant purposes, kind of becomes an arbitrary line as to when you're seeing their invoice. So all work was completed within the 15-16 city budget. Consultant contract total was corrected. You notice it was different by about 6,000, something like that. That was because the cultural survey contract had been double counted just in the overall commitment summary, not double paid. I want to make sure everybody understands that, but if you go back and you look at the last version, you'll see it's $6,000 difference on the consultant budget, and that's just because we had it counted in two areas because of how we were managing that consultant in our software. So that's cleaned up now. We revised the methodology too, and this is something we can work with Barbara on. What we used for this report was the dates that work was completed or that hours were accrued for consultants, and then invoice dates for the direct costs. to within the fiscal year to come up with a number. So it resulted in a little different number. And the total invoice amounts for consultants that we had reported were year-to-date expenditures. That's where we're at that now is year-to-date, in other words, year-to-date invoiced amounts. And we'd previously reported total payments, so that explains, that's really the difference. It's not the total checks that were cut, it's the total hours that were accrued by the consultants. And one thing that I did talk to Barbara about is making sure in the future on these financial reports that we align better with the city's general ledger. We didn't confirm that here, but because we've got macros set up in our spreadsheet that pull in information from the city's accounting system.
They should overlap. We'll double check that.
We'll make sure they align. Yeah.
You got that.
So we'll address that.
Mm-hmm. Can I just go before you go one more?
Sure.
It relates to that. In your description, you said all costs for a given period are based on the invoice dates, except for consultant costs as described below. Will that be able to match to the city's general ledger? Because they go back and do accruals at the last quarter typically. So referencing what Bill just said, it should match identically.
Yep.
I'm looking for it to be close, but.
Yeah, we'll confirm that.
Okay, thank you.
So a few updates on project finance, and this goes well with the information that that Jenny shared with us. So we have the state revolving fund planning loan in for $10.3 million, and that's what Jenny had mentioned earlier. And state board's reviewing it. We are expecting to have a draft agreement for that this month, according to the state water board's project manager for our funding. The city is intending to pursue an SRF construction loan for the balance of the phase one water reclamation facility program. And financing for phase two, of course, will be figured out once we get through master reclamation plan.
I have a question on that.
Yes.
So you were saying that you're planning to use the state water, the SRF for the balance. I thought we were going to be looking at other grant opportunities and bonds and.
We absolutely are.
Okay.
And so I one of the things I have as a bullet up here is that the city intends to identify and apply for state and federal construction grants. That's an important step for us. That really has to be done as you get towards the end of your EIR process, because you're in much better position on those if you're shovel ready.
Right.
And so that's going to be, and we'll talk about that when we get to the schedule, because that's going to be one of our items that we're going to hit really hard first quarter of next year. So the SRF construction loan application will be completed once the EIR is certified. And as you mentioned, we're not, our goal is to identify as many grants as the city could qualify for once we have the project fully defined and are in a position where we can be highly competitive because we're far down the permitting path. We want to identify those programs and be as aggressive as we can pursuing those. Mm-hmm. But the SRF loan is some sort of financing is important for what you don't get the grants for, and you have to make sure you have the financing to pick that up. Some of those construction grants might come in late in the game, so we want to make sure we have the project financed so that those grants are helping us out. But we need to make sure you have financing in place.
Do the grants or cost of money have an effect on whether the city commits to phase two?
It will, part of the planning of phase two is determined in the financing. One of the advantages on phase one is you've already passed a rate increase to account for about roughly a $70 million project. So you have some money that you're already, that is built into your rates now for phase one. But anything in phase one beyond that, anything in phase two, that's where the additional financing we have to.
Well, I was wondering whether at the front end you have some leverage if you make a commitment to go to some means of water reclamation on the onset, would you get a better favor in consideration for, grants or other financial aid?
Well, what we are seeing is that you are much more competitive on those grant and loan programs, because most of them are, most of the grant programs are focused on recycled water and sustainability. And so that may
That's
be where we have the solar discussion, and we look at other things as well to help us with that. So, yeah, that's a very good point, and it's entirely valid. And even with SRF financing, is, you know, it's important to recognize that you rank higher in priority on SRF if you are if you're recycling.
Yeah, you're committed.
Yeah, where I was coming from is I don't want to lose sight of what we discussed earlier, and I think you had mentioned that we're conservatively anticipating maybe 10% grants.
And what I would say is we're not limiting ourselves to pursuing 10%.
I'm hoping for more.
Yeah, exactly. And that's we are too. But you know, the realistic assumption is that you might be in the 10% neighborhood. We might do better, and we want to do better.
Okay.
In terms of environmental review and permitting, so the notice of preparation for the environmental impact report was released on August the 7th. Scoping meeting was held on August the 16th. Draft EIR, we're expecting to release that in August 2017. Final EIR in November certification. And then we're coordinating with Coastal Commission, Regional Water Quality Control Board, and a variety of regulatory resource agencies such as Fish and Wildlife, as the EIR is moving forward. So at this point, I'll open to any questions you have on the status report. I would say we will discuss the schedule as a separate item. I'll open to any questions you have on the updates here. One item I did want to point out, too, that we addressed in the staff report is we talked a little bit about, and this was, you know, I know Jenny reviewed this as well, the IUP that came from SRF. They are projecting in a couple years they may have a cash shortfall. So it's something we're watching, and a lot of other agencies are watching as well. Their options are the state may go back, sell more bonds. There may be other things they do to get that to have money. We have time we'll see that before we get into construction. And part of what we'll do over the next several months is work on what alternative financing could look like, just so we're prepared with a plan B on financing if we need to go that route. But it's something we're tracking closely. Because, you know, it's the nice thing about a revolving fund is it's just what it sounds like. As the money comes back in from all the agencies that borrowed it, it replenishes. But there's a little, they're anticipating there might be a year or so there where it drops a little before it can get fully replenished. So we're going to keep an eye on that and keep monitoring it for the city.
Okay, Dale.
Hi, two quick questions, please. Number one, when you talked about the standards for the salinity control, et cetera, are the standards, the discharge standards, higher for the South Bay Boulevard site now than they were for the other two previous sites in general?
I would think that they would be about the same.
The same
for either site, because the anticipated use of the water will be the same, groundwater recharge or some sort of ag exchange process.
Okay, thanks. Just one that. And then, let's see. My other question was, you did talk about the capital costs were not justified for power savings and improvements to the lift stations there. Not just capital power costs, but there were no other savings.
Right. In terms of life cycle costs,
okay,
what it resulted in was taking some couple of lift stations that are relatively small, putting in much larger pumps, and then timing the logistics of pumping into shared pipelines becomes pretty complicated too. So we looked at all that, and it just, you know, we did some life cycle cost estimates, and it didn't appear to be worth it.
Considered everything. Okay, and then just very quickly, we have been talking for a long time about some of the consultant costs and the difficulty in applying for some of these grants. Is it correct to assume that the more grants we apply for, the more effort will be consumed in consultant labor, that we do not have the city staff that can just unilaterally apply for all these grants?
I would say I can't speak to city resources, but I would say that's correct. Typically, for the water wastewater grant programs, they're highly competitive. Mm-hmm. And you want people putting those together who have relationships with the staff at all the different agencies. You know, we have Kestrel on board. You haven't seen them in a while, just because until we have the project well defined,
right,
grants have a shelf life, and so those programs, they have to look at what's fresh at the moment that you've got. You know, they see when the CEQA and the EIR is going to be certified, and they see that you've got your project well defined, and that's where they really start mobilizing. But part of their contract is to continue identifying these programs, and you'll see them coming back in under their existing contract where they've still got money left, coming back in to start that ball rolling again. But the grant applications can be expensive for water wastewater programs because there's a lot you put into them. They become kind of mini studies in a lot of cases. So you want to be real careful which ones you go after, and you compete against a lot of agencies for them. They're highly competitive. But that's
so it's
one
a pick and choose. You just can't, you know,
you
blanket.
Can't blitz them all.
Unless
that's
you
right.
want to expend a lot of dollars
yeah.
doing that for yeah. a lower probability of return.
That's right. And we want to explore that particularly with finance mm-hmm. subcommittee as we get farther down the road.
Right. We've met with Kestrel before.
Yeah.
So when you get a little further along and have the project, we're certainly amenable to being included
yeah, and
in
take advantage
that
of Jenny's experience, you know, and really try to leverage everything we can there.
And,
thank you.
You know, I don't look at just Kestrel. I'm hoping that down the line somehow we can get a work group together. Maybe there'll be
sure.
volunteers that can assemble some of the information so it's not so expensive.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, if you want to make an application, you want to do a good job. You just don't want to shotgun it out average.
Right.
You want to go out and do it with an exemplary.
That's right. But my experience has been that you have to apply to get the money. And
absolutely.
And apply well.
And you have to play well.
And,
right.
and I'm open to, I think we're open to any strategy that you know, makes us competitive.
Whether
so
we
we're
can
definitely
help
open
the staff,
sure.
you know.
John, we have John on the line. I don't know whether you're still there or not. John, do you have any comments before we go public here?
I'm still here and no comments. Thank you, Bill.
All right. Okay, public, you heard all that. Anybody want to say anything? We have more agenda. We're going to address the schedule next. Please identify yourself. You've got 3 minutes.
Tina Metzger. Why isn't there a WRFCAC meeting in November? And what exactly are the facilities of the project?
Staff, would you like to address that now, or would you want to wait until she's finished?
Could,
why don't you go ahead and do it?
The timing, she could go ahead and finish the comments.
Do you have other questions, Tina? Or,
okay.
Okay. Why don't you go ahead and do it?
So the first answer is why no WRFCAC in November? You know, we have a lot to do to get the facility master plan out. And the thought was we've got a community workshop we're going to have towards the middle of November. And we didn't see anything that we would really be covering that would warrant bringing the committee together.
Could you expand on that a little bit, Mike? When you put this out, the draft of the general facilities plan, are you going to have a public meeting with public input?
So what we're looking to do is release the draft facility master plan to the public on November the 9th.
How do you do that?
So we'll release it online.
Online.
Most likely, but we'll discuss with the city. We'll make other
copies. We'll have printed copies probably in our office. We typically use the library for a printed copy, post it to our website.
And you'll be online as well.
Yes.
And then are you going to have a public meeting?
Then follow that up with about a week later, have a public meeting similar to ones we've had before, where it's not a Brown Act public meeting, where we have a little bit more flexibility in the time that people can talk, and it's more of a give and take with answers and questions.
Okay. And that's why we aren't going to meet regularly on the next month's schedule, because of all of those activities. It would be a little bit wasteful, I guess, on everybody's time if we know what's going to come tomorrow.
And what we hope is, too, that the WRFCAC members will be at the workshop too that week, so we would see that. You know, we'd consider whether to make that a WRFCAC meeting or not. We decided just to make it a community workshop, bring everybody.
I think the consensus would be up here. I'm speaking for everyone and John. I would think that we would be in if you want to do it that way.
That'd be great. And then our goal, too, is come back first week of December to have detailed input from you after you've had a chance to look at the master plan, attend the community meeting, and can give us some good.
This
good
might be the
comments.
Best way to do it. You guys got to think about it, but I think we're in.
I can tell you from the CFAC, trying to work around, not work around, but work within the Brown Rule regulations, it makes it extremely difficult for a smaller committee or subcommittee. So we went to the workshop venue for our last meeting, and it was much more effective.
Okay, she had a second question.
Exactly what are the facilities?
So the water reclamation facility, phase one of the water reclamation facility includes all the treatment processes required to get to tertiary treatment with disinfection per council direction. It also includes the lift station pipeline to the plant, pipeline back to the outfall for brine wet weather discharge and for initial discharge until the water reclamation opportunities are in place. The other items in terms of space planning is, per council's direction, we're also looking at how much room might be acquired for, there's the city corporation yard that would have shared facilities with the water reclamation facility, shared offices, showers, operations center. Also, what additional area might be required for other public works facilities associated with the corp yard, such as looking at facilities required. That's not necessary, how that's funded, that's kind of a whole separate project for us, but we're just looking at it in terms of space planning, and then also how much area might be required for solar, even though solar's not part of the, not really in the project description right now. And then there's also the issues, that from the CEQA perspective, the EIR needs to analyze all the possible impacts, all the possible things that could occur at that site. We still think those are the most reasonable mix and match for other facilities.
Would it include a model? Would it include a model for phase two, where it would be and how it would be integrated?
It'll include, the site plan will include what some elements of phase two and what those might look like. Part of what we want to do is lay it out, make it real clear to folks what's what, show it on the site plan, and then get input from council and the public.
So, if I understand you correctly, you still don't really know what all the facilities are. You haven't made that decision yet?
We don't make that decision. It's up to council.
And when will the council make that decision?
I would assume they'll want to see facility master plan, so I would say they would be looking at it. Our goal is to bring it to council at their meeting first meeting in December after the WRFCAC meeting.
So you're drawing up a facilities master plan right now.
Timing.
Yes.
I just want to make sure we follow the rules of order.
Your podium is getting limited.
Okay. Why don't I just list my questions then, and then he can.
Well, you're okay. Be reasonable up there.
Okay. So it's my understanding that you still don't understand or know what exactly is the project in all the phases, and the council doesn't know, and yet you're drawing the facilities master plan right now, and you're drafting up an MOU with the property owner, and you don't know exactly what facilities are going to be on site. And my last question is, when are you going to share the MOU with the public?
Okay, thank you. The MOU that I believe she's referring to is the property negotiations, and they're very sensitive. I don't know when. I know that they're behind closed doors, so I don't know whether you can state that or not.
So it'll have to, it will come to council for approval after negotiations taken place.
After approval, then it will be a public document, would it not?
It will come to council for final.
It will come to open session for approval.
Come to open session.
Oh.
Yeah, it won't be approved in closed session. They'll take a look at it in closed session, but it can't be approved in closed session. Agreements have to be approved in open session.
Okay, good.
But it won't have confidentiality terms, is correct?
Correct. It'll be an open, so it'll be published within the notification requirements of a council meeting. Generally, we get it out at least five working days prior to that council meeting. So
okay, good. Yeah. Anyone other comments up here? How about you, public?
The other thing I'd like to address is the question about we don't know exactly what's in the project. So really the purpose of the facility master plan is to lay out what can be in the project, allow council to review it, and allow them to make those decisions. So that's really the, you know, the goal of the master plan is to lay out what all you can do at the site, what the possibilities might be with the focus being water reclamation facility, but talk about these other council goals that have been part of the project now for 3 years. And lay out what that costs, what that looks like. Okay. So that really is the goal of facility master plan.
And we had a whole number of technical reports that were prepared in support of the facilities master plan.
Yeah.
Remember that we looked at last year.
We're going to give a summary of that, too, on the next staff report.
And the technologies that are potentially that we're going to be using, that's what the facilities master plan is. It's all the components of what it takes to build a sewage treatment plant, water reclamation facility, as well as the architectural renderings, which is something else that you've been working on based on our previous community workshop. So it's not that you don't know what is in the facility master's plan. You're working on putting all those elements together. It's a complicated technical report. And so I just wanted to clarify that.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. That takes care of that item, and now that gets us, come on up. You got 3 minutes, Red.
I won't take it. Robert Davis, I just have one question. What is the purpose of the solar facility?
So the purpose of the solar facility would be to provide power for the water reclamation facility and try to reduce as much of the reliance on electricity on the power grid as possible. So
the new project is going to be higher energy consumer than our existing project. We have a baseline greenhouse gas inventory, so we need to try to offset as much as possible the higher energy use and. Along with efficient blowers, motors, and perhaps some form of energy recovery, all that's looking less likely, solar is another option.
It's a very intensive, energy-intensive facility, and where you can eliminate or save electrical energy, it's going to be saving a lot of money, a lot of dollars. Real dollars. So you evaluate all these things: pumps, efficient, high efficiency pumps, solar power as well, and each has its cost benefit ratio. So okay, that gets us to the schedule update, staff.
Should have some hold music while Rob's pulling this up. Should put that on. Sound system. This again is really going to be an overview of what's in your staff report.
We understand.
Yep. One thing I did want to add too, we've done an update to the morrowbaywharf.com website with frequently asked questions. One of the questions that pops up is, how come Santa Paula and Fillmore were done in 2 years and you guys are moving so slow? So we added some information in there that, you know, basically to explain that Fillmore and Santa Paula, when they say they were done in 2 or 2.5 years, they're talking just construction. But the planning process on those projects took many years before that. And so we've got a little information there if folks want to check that out, because we think it's pretty important to understand that, you know, why are we getting all these consultant bills? Why are there all these consultant contracts? Well, the planning phase of this is critical, and it takes a few years on the front end to get your environmental impact report, your project financing, your design work done, and then the construction can proceed, you know, with a you know, well-defined, low-risk, affordable project. So I did add some information just to get some historical perspective on those projects. So schedule update. So first off, our goal for FY 16-17 is really planning, permitting, and procurement of consultants for elements of the Phase 1 water reclamation facility. That's really the focus right now. So some specific objectives for this fiscal year, of course, completing the facility master plan in the next couple of months, completing the master water reclamation plan, technical studies and some initial drafts of the EIR, and the procurement of the SRF planning and design loan. Those are specific objectives for this fiscal year. The thing I'd like to point out is our major milestones are on track for the last council and WRFCAC reports. So we considered our start date, City Manager Buckingham said June 14th. So that was the start date. Revised schedule items we highlighted in this last version of the schedule. One of the members of the public had asked, hey, can you highlight when you change stuff? I thought that was a great idea. So I did that this time around. Just to show so you can see some of the detailed work efforts that are current for us, and you can see what's going on. The most significant items that we changed really are defining this November 9th release date for the public draft facility master plan. That's a hard date for us. And then some additional details for work efforts within the master reclamation plan. And these aren't deliverables that are going to go out to the public, or these are more internal kind of working sections that we're passing back and forth between city staff, but I think it's informative for you all to see what we're working on and what we're doing.
Can I interject?
Yes, sir.
A couple meetings ago, Rob was talking about a city water master plan, which is separate and distinct from a reclamation plan for the WRF. And it includes state water, and it includes wells, and it includes the cost of reclamation and all other things. And didn't we go out for a contract for that? And isn't that a very important element for decision-making on what's going on up here?
No, we haven't released that RFP for that item yet. Staff is still working on that item. Yes, it is very important, but it's not on the critical path for the water reclamation facility. It's on the critical path for supplying our future water needs.
But wouldn't your development of reclaimed water be an element of that plan?
Yes, it'll feed into that plan. So it'll be something that we won't need to repeat in that plan. We'll adopt that water reclamation plan as appendix to what a lot of cities call their one water plan. Yeah. So it's looking at all water resources, including wastewater and stormwater.
Is that somewhere in the foreseeable future for an RFP and a contract?
I certainly hope so. I'm working on it right now. It's just we're working on a few things.
Is that all?
That's it.
Okay, go ahead.
So some milestones and council decisions that will be occurring over, and this is really focused up through June, so into the fiscal year. This is a table we put together for the last council meeting, but I don't believe we talked about it at WRFCAC. I wanted to bring it in and talk about this, and then also talk about how that breaks down to how we've planned out the WRFCAC meetings for the next several months and get your input on that. So release of the public draft facility master plan scheduled for November the 9th. We were at one point had talked about doing a community workshop on Phase 1 WRF architecture sometime in October. We decided just to push that together with facility master plan, release it all at the same time, because we think it's just as important to know what the architecture would cost as to see the architecture. Because at this point, we got really good input from community workshops, from neighbors of the property on the type of style folks want to see, and what's acceptable over there. So we feel like the facility master plan, releasing it together is really important, talking about it together. So draft facility master plan, November. Final facility master plan, December, is the goal after council reviews. And then council selection of a delivery method for the phase one water reclamation facility. We're looking at that in January. And as you recall, we want to come back and talk to council more about, you know, whether just to confirm that we're going to go design build, talk about what that process will look like, or if council wants to look at conventional design bid build, but just to confirm that we're going the right direction on the project based on the parameters in facility master plan.
So when is that decision going to make? I was looking at your schedule, and that was one of the things that I was concerned about. When are you?
Sure.
When do you think that staff is going to make a recommendation on design build or design build, maybe even design build operate?
Design build operate is no longer legal for cities in California. You're not allowed
really?
To roll those together. You can do design build optimize. Has to do with the state law that passed last January, I believe, that limited what cities could do with that.
Okay. Well, then let's
go
back.
Yeah, but we'll talk about different modes of really like looking at most likely. We did the workshop last October to kind of educate folks on what these are.
Yeah.
What we're looking at is you know, most likely is the question, is it going to be more of what's called a progressive design build? Or is it going to be a best value design build? And it really has to do with the selection and how much cost information you have when you make your decision on it. But we'll get into that detail in January.
Okay.
So we'll bring that. The draft master water reclamation plan will be coming in March. Some of the hydrogeologic work we talked about earlier is informing that and is really important for us. And then April, the goal is we have full confirmation of the whole program, phase one, phase two, capital and O&M costs for, you know, all the way from, you know, when the wastewater gets picked up down on Atascadero Road all the way to where it's ultimately reused. The goal is also in April for council selection and award for what we call the phase one wharf offsite improvements. That's lift station and pipelines. And we've talked about is there's no benefit for that being design build. That needs to go design bid build because you need to design pipelines around things and under things and get permits from Caltrans and work around, you know, work through city right away. And then our request for qualifications for design and construction of the phase one on-site improvements, so the plant work would, the goal is to release the request for qualifications for that in June. So we'd be clipping right along between January and June on getting, you know, developed. And June would be, the goal would be to submit and send out the request for qualifications for these design build teams or design construction teams, and then shortlist later on in the year. So release of the public draft EIR is scheduled for August. The RFP, so we do a two-stage process with design build, for example, and that's where you release a request for qualifications, you shortlist to the two or three most qualified firms, and you get detailed proposals from them, and you have negotiations and meetings with them to get the best proposal and bring that back to council for consideration. The certification of the final EIR, we've said that really is, you know, scheduled for November 2017. That's a critical timeline for grant pursuits, because once we've got that, we can begin identifying and pursuing a little bit in advance of that. But once we got that, we're really considered to be shovel ready, particularly on design build or alternative delivery projects. And we're not waiting till then, but that's really critical for us for funding. And then negotiation award of the contract for the phase one water reclamation facility. The on-site improvements is in May 2018. And you may ask, well, why is that? Why do you wait till May to award that contract? Well, a couple things to keep in mind is you don't want to award a design and construction contract until you pretty well see that you've got your financing in place. Until you have your EIR done, you can't submit your final package for review for SRF financing. It takes about 9 months to get that. So the goal would be use part of the planning and design loan from SRF to fund some of the initial design activities for that design builder or design construction team, and then have the construction financing come in a few months into that contract so that project is fully funded. So, and that's a pretty accelerated path.
I have a question. So the $10 million that we're getting for the SRF, a lot of the studies that we've done, can that go, can the $10 million pay for that?
It can go towards invoices that were accrued, I believe, as of the date of the application, but I'll double check. I can't remember if it's the day of the application or date of the agreement, but I'll confirm that and get back to you.
Okay.
And really all that is for is a cash flow issue. It's yeah. still a loan. It's not free money. Right. So we've already spent that money, so I'm not sure if there's really any advantages of rolling it into the loan at this point in time. Well, it's a cash flow for outer years before the rates catch up with the expenditures during those when we really get into the first part of design build.
Okay. You know, going through all of this, too, I'm wondering if other people are thinking, gosh, it's a lot of work, all these studies you have to do to build a wastewater treatment plant. And what I was thinking to myself was, well, yeah, when our plant was built all those years ago, that was way before the environmental regulations.
Right.
So now everybody's seeing what it's like to live today and build a brand new wastewater treatment plant. It takes a long time to plan and a lot of money for the studies. And what you don't want is to have it stalled anymore because the studies were flawed or incomplete.
Yeah, that's correct. And then also just the timeline with permitting and then with public financing, just the timelines for those become critical path because you can't do a lot until you've got the money in hand, and the process takes a while because you got to have your environmental impact report done. So. And so then the goal would be award of contract for construction of the phase one offsite improvements, lift station and pipelines. That wouldn't have to be awarded till April 2019 because that construction will go pretty fast. So, and you don't really want to start messing around with your collection system until you're pretty sure you're going to have a plant in place fairly soon. So there's no advantage to really going in and starting that part of it early. But that could slide too if we see that it makes more sense to move it forward for some reason.
Well, the more you do, the earlier you do, the better off you are.
That's correct. That's correct. So, but again, that also has to do with the contract for the phase one offsite improvements. That's something that again, until you've kind of got that plan in place though.
Okay.
Because you've got to do modifications at the existing collection system location, and you want to make sure you're doing all that in pretty short order with tying over pipes and that sort of thing. Because once you've done it, you can't really go back.
Barbara, you got anything else to add?
No, I don't. I'm okay with that.
And our goal is completion of phase one water reclamation facility improvements in May 2021.
Does that include commissioning and in service?
Commissioning would be taking place in May.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Val, you got anything? Dale? Public. 3 minutes. You want to comment on the schedule at all? Okay, I have one comment, or I have a question, really. Who owns the schedule?
City owns the schedule.
In other words, who...
I thought you mean like who owns the float. That's always a question.
Well, yeah. In my experience, the city would own the schedule, and what that means is that you cannot change the schedule without the city's approval. In my experience, and what that does is that you have to come up with get well plans on issues of which are lagging behind schedule. How is the city of Morro Bay addressing that?
So we address this in our biweekly project meetings. We look at schedule, make sure that we're not out of schedule for any critical path items. Items that aren't on the critical path are less concerned because there's
correct.
Time to make that up. So
what you do is you integrate between the project team and the city staff biweekly to come to an agreement on schedule milestones and critical path items and get well plans and so forth and so on. Is that the way you address it?
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay, I guess that.
Yeah, one more. Following up on what Bill just said, sometimes now that we've actually physically started something, you set a baseline in your schedule chart, your Gantt chart, and has that start date, and then anything that deviates or falls off that baseline is indicated somehow again in that Gantt chart. Are we going to be doing that or seeing that in the future, where the baseline started and how we've deviated from it?
Sure. What I would suggest is, and this is not, you know, I consider when I put these dates up, I know what it's like when you publish something to Morro Bay and you don't hit that date, you will be notified.
I've kind of
bought into it, but the thing I would point out is what I'd like to do is get through the facility master plan, and then we could begin showing baseline now. That wouldn't be an issue.
Schedule is a huge instrument.
Sure.
We want to see where the deviations and the dynamics are.
Yep. And part of what we'll do, too, is I'll continue to highlight things that change, like we did today. I mean, that's kind of a simple way to do it, is you can always look at the problem with the depiction sometimes on those baselines is it's like this little faded gray line, and sometimes it doesn't show up real well.
Right.
But we can start doing that. It's no problem. And it will also continue to highlight things that change just so you can see where we're what's going on.
Okay, John, we're about ready to close the door on this baby. So you got anything to say?
Thanks, Bill. I'm fine just enjoying the discussion.
Okay. So this allows us to go around the table one more time for our closing comments. Jenny, do you have any? How about you, Barbara?
Yes, I want to thank you for the budget quarterly and year-to-date report. I would ask that eventually this be published on the website, but there's still a few other things I want to compare in conjunction with the Citizens Finance Committee. But I think at some point this is a good summary, high level, and we get it out there so that people can see what the costs are. So.
And it kind of is on the website because it's part of the agenda package, so it's in the WRFCAC agenda. But we'll take the slide presentations and put those on our WRFCAC website so that everybody stays updated that wasn't able to make the meeting.
That's a good point. I didn't think about the agenda. Thanks.
Paul.
On the upcoming workshop on November 14th, is there going to be some sort of outreach to get people aware that it's coming? And
yeah, I think we'll do our postcards, the half-sheet postcards. Those are fairly inexpensive to distribute and seem to work better than just Facebook and email.
Have you had any feedback from people that didn't receive the last one, or did we do better this time?
I think we've heard from people that have never received them. I don't know how we can force the post office to deliver if they're really not getting them.
It's not a lot of people, Rob, would you say? I mean, just a handful maybe. But we've gotten confirmation from a lot of folks who received it too. So.
Val. Dale. Okay, then this gets us to the adjournment to the next scheduled meeting of December 6th. 3 p.m. here. Maybe staff will change that due to Tina's comment. We're receptive to it. I'm sure we'll get adequate notice if that takes place. But the next scheduled is December 6th. And this meeting is adjourned.